And welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus, 106 in the afternoon on this chilly, chilly Thursday. Yikes. This is more like early October. Normal highs in early October are in the mid-60s, and we're at about 59 right now. So we're going to be, this is October. Clouds, a few sprinkles, and a stiff northwest wind. It helped to turn your
Thank
mic
you.
On, didn't it?
What did I tell you about frost-free days till November 1st?
Don't worry. I'm
giving you the evil eye.
I know you are.
We're going to need them.
I've seen that before. Okay. No, this is just a temporary setback. Next couple of days, unseasonably cool weather. Ty was asking me earlier, what do we need? Like, is there anything the agriculture community really needs weather-wise? I'm like, more heat.
Yeah.
More heat, uh-huh. a little more moisture.
Timely rain.
Yeah, and we should be good. But I was taking a look since, at least here in Fargo, out at the airport where the records are kept, since June 1st, we're about 2 inches below normal. So we could use – now, again, you've seen some of these spotty rains which dump on some areas, and they're fine. But as a whole, over our area, we're about 2 inches below where we should be since June 1st. But the year as a whole, we're right on schedule. We're right on target.
Mother Nature always has a way of balancing it out. If you listen to any of the old wives' tales that farmers will talk about, that's just a reminder that what we saw for a winter without much snow – all of a sudden, we were making it up in the spring. What we're seeing right now, where we're a little bit behind, could come back to bite us in a fall harvest season. We aren't quite sure what that looks like yet. Although, that's what the LRC should be doing, is telling us what harvest is going to look like.
Exactly. And you can find that out if you go to weather2020.com, and there's plenty of information on there about the LRC. Now, we had rainfall yesterday, but boy, we picked up less than a tenth of an inch here in the FM area. But areas down to our south from... let's say Wolverton through Rothsay, Wahpeton, Morton, over towards Lakes Country into Ottertail, picking up anywhere between a half inch and an inch and a quarter. So some decent rainfalls to our south, and I believe that's the second time in the last week or so where that's where the heaviest rains have concentrated. So those areas are fine in terms of precip, but again, from the 94 corridor, I think northward, we could use a nice little drink. And
There is
some in the forecast.
Remember, folks will tell you that rain begets rain. So if it's already wet with a lot of moisture, humidity buildup, those same areas are still going to get tracked, right?
Seems to be what's happening, at least so far this summer. But we've got cool weather for today and tomorrow, with temperatures today only topping out in the mid-60s, maybe a sprinkle or two out there, but overall shouldn't be anything too bad. But those west-northwest winds gusting close to 30 or higher at times. Tonight, partly cloudy, upper 40s with a northwest wind 10 to 20. Friday, I think we'll see a little more sunshine, but we'll still have clouds mixed in, especially in the afternoon. With winds not as strong, northwest 10 to 25, highs only around 70, sunshine over the weekend, lighter winds, mid-70s Saturday, upper 70s Sunday, should reach 80 on Monday, and then a chance for some showers and storms Tuesday and Wednesday of next week as temperatures try to warm back into the 80s, and it still looks like by mid-month we should see 80s and maybe a few 90s move back into the area. So that's good news for the corn, and that should make some farmers happy. And
also soybeans.
And soybeans.
That's why we need to get some timely rain before Labor Day, because we want to finish out the soybeans.
Yeah. So we'll try, and we're not done with the hot weather. Our European model, I haven't taken a look at the LRC. I think the LRC favored 80s. Our American model warms us up, but then keeps bringing clipper systems down from Canada, cooling us down, not leaving the heat in place, where the European model is kind of, it's leaving the heat ridge over our area,
right?
Where the American model kind of shifts it a little further west, which keep us a little cooler. So I'll take a look at the LRC model, and we'll have more on that tomorrow.
All right.
See what the rest of the month holds.
Well, the rest of the month is a heavy gardening season, and that'll be a great lead-in for the fact that we have Don Kinsler from NDSU with us today. Whenever we have garden radio, it's mostly about Justin and I just looking at our gardens, and I'll see if I can look up a picture of mine. I took one just the other day and posted it, so I'll see if I can pull that.
Well, you brought in a bunch of goodies to work here.
Thank you very much.
There's not anything left, everybody. That's gone.
Well, it is National Leave a Zucchini on Your Neighbor's Porch Day, and I brought in a whole flat of zucchini so that you can all participate in that game.
I'd rather have your zucchini bread that you were eating earlier.
Yeah, I ate that all.
Oh, yeah, that's gone. That's
that was
gone.
A chocolate zucchini cake with candied pecans in it, and then a recipe that actually my mom always used with a chocolate frosting.
And you didn't even share.
I considered it, and then I just kept eating because it went right along with my tater tot hot dish left over lunch.
So I've got a question for you. If I took a cucumber, I love cucumbers.
Right.
Maybe cider ranch or something, dip it in. If I put one of your garden cucumbers next to a cucumber I bought, I'd be blindfolded, next to a cucumber I bought in the store and taste tested them, could you tell the difference?
Okay, so since Don is here, I think both Don and I should weigh in on this one. And this is purely opinion. Comes down to variety, right? What kind of cucumber? If you bought the same variety cucumbers, could you tell the difference? But if you bought an English seedless cucumber versus what you would consider a traditional cucumber, yeah, you'd be able to tell the difference. If you were blindfolded and you were just looking at taste, you would get the same flavor. I would venture a guess that the homegrown might be more intense than a commercially grown because we push the water so quickly for commercial production. Don, where are you at in this? What do you think?
Definitely. Okay. Definitely will tell the difference.
Really?
Okay. Oh, definitely.
So what's the difference between the store-bought ones and the ones that are like from Bridget's Garden?
Now, the store-bought ones, if they are grown elsewhere, you're going to tell the difference. Right. If the store-bought ones were sourced locally, then probably not. For example, you can tell the difference between a Honeycrisp apple that was grown locally, North Dakota, Minnesota, versus one that was raised on the West Coast. Because sometimes I've had people ask me, how come my neighbor's Honeycrisp apples that they gave me, they taste so much better than the store-bought ones? Because here we have a consolidated growing season. It gets cooler in the fall. The sugars build up. And so we have an intensity in this area.
Sweeter.
Yeah. And I think that intensity is reflected also even in cucumbers.
Well, to that example, I wouldn't use cucumbers, but I would use celery. So I'm one of those few people who raises celery in her garden. I have my own hidden gem greenhouse that I go to because they have celery every year. The flavor, let me back up. My celery, as far as size, probably is not quite as tall as Cooper, our mascot here on the table. Okay. So my celery bunches are about that tall. They get very wide. They're not narrow and tall like when you buy them at the grocery store. And because of that shortness, they are triple the flavor power.
Absolutely.
It's tremendous.
No, they're almost like different vegetables.
Yes.
Now, Don, is there any way to tell outside, maybe we have to ask the produce manager, but when we go to the grocery store, it doesn't say if it's if they're locally grown typically. So how would we know? Just by asking the produce manager?
Usually, by the way, good afternoon, everyone. I didn't say good afternoon.
We brought you in a little early today.
but anyway, usually if they're locally grown, that's a selling point. So if they're locally grown, they will usually use that as a marketing advantage, and they will usually say that. For example, sweet corn, they'll usually say
locally grown.
A locally grown sweet corn.
Okay. Which is awfully far behind because just Wednesday, what day is it? Thursday? Tuesday, I was in the local grocery store and a conversation between a neighbor and the grocery store owner was that it's going to be at least next week until her locally grown sweet corn was available. We are just that far behind in growing degree days.
Yeah.
I was in a cornfield this morning. We are certainly quickly approaching milk stage in the corn. A lot of blister corn out there. And it's not moving fast. It's
how far behind would you say in that delay?
I have been told that we are probably, you know, if you look at like GDUs and so forth, we're probably 700 behind. We can make those up in a fairly, but we're going to need some sunshine and some warmth
in order
for
string
of days to do it.
Sure.
Yeah. We will have the majority of our corn makes it, you know, through good quality through harvest. Will we have enough time for it to dry down to a lower moisture content? Remains to be seen. We'll see. We've had these years before where we've had to combine in the winter.
Well, we're coming up on break, so we've got to pay some bills. But you've heard Don. We brought him in earlier. Don Kinsler, our special guest today. If you have any questions for Don, I'm sure many people do. 701-293-9000, the Red Wing Shoes Hotline. Again, that's 701-293-9000. We'll take those questions coming up right after the break. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you for joining us here on WDAY Weather and Ag and Focus. We are so busy comparing notes and talking gardening off air. We barely have time to remember that we got to get our headphones on and come back on the air with the rest of you. So many things. First of all, a big thank you to Red River Retention Authority. They are one of our Here We Grow sponsors. I was in the field this morning. Corn is fast approaching maturity height. It was great to see it. Silks are mostly brown on the ends and plenty of still like pollen, if you will, from the tassel. There's a lot of stuff going on in the field this morning. Mm. And so it was good to be out in the field. And thank you to Red River Retention Authority for being one of our sponsors. They had me at their meeting last week where we got to speak just a little bit at their partner summit. And then also to Gowan. They are Gowan USA based out of Arizona. They bring us Affiance fungicide. So we are making sure that we keep our field healthy and ready to go. For all of you who are ready to go and have questions for our guest today, Don Kinsler of NDSU, he is the horticulturalist extraordinaire. I'm sure you have a regular title, but I like that one.
Well, you know, except the extraordinaire. You know, as I always say, we're all in this together. We're all just gardening, trying to do the best we can yes. and get things to grow the way we'd like.
We are, we are. And so yeah. For those who want to call, you can reach us at 701-293-9000.
Now, Don, we were talking off air. So my son is up here visiting from Omaha, and he's out playing with the neighbor kids, and I look down the block, and I see him throwing his shoe up in the tree. I'm like, what, is this a new kid thing? He goes, I said, what are you doing? Hey, we're just knocking down some apples. I'll bring some home for you, Dad. I'm like, okay. So he brings it home, and green apple, very tart, and I'm thinking, well, this can't be ripe. Most apples ripen in August or right around that time frame. So how can we tell when an apple is ripe and ready to be picked?
Bring up a great point, Dean. Excuse me. And first of all, different named cultivars of apples have different ripening periods. Some apple varieties ripen in August, some in September, and some not until October. So, for example, if an apple is a cultivar that ripens in August, an early one, that one's not going to hang on the tree until October. And if it's a late apple, such as Harrelson, that ripens in October, that one's not going to be ready in August. So if you know the name of the apple, mm-hmm. you can do an online search and see when is Prairie Magic Apple, which is a good one developed out of Canada. When is Prairie Magic Apple typically ripe? So a person will find out about the first part of September. And so you can, if you know the name of it, you can see when, if is it an early apple, is it a late apple. And if you pick them earlier than what they should be, they're going to be sour. But what if you've bought a place and it has an apple tree and you have no idea what the name of it is? Okay. Then there's a couple of ways you can tell. Red does not indicate a ripe apple. They turn red long before they are ready to pick. Mm-hmm. So the red color doesn't matter. Okay, what you look for is what is called the background color. That's the non-red color on the apple fruit. Usually when they're not ripe, it'll be a green color, mm-hmm. you know, unless it's a Granny Smith green apple. Okay, different right. case. Okay, but on most apples, the green background color indicates a non-ripe apple. But as that background color changes from green to more of a creamy white or creamy yellow, then that's an indication it's approaching ripeness. Another good indication is to pick an apple, cut it in two, and when apples get ripe, these seeds turn from kind of a tannish, unripe apple to a glossy black seed. You know, I think of a store-bought apple. When you cut it, the seeds are glossy black brown. Okay, so that should be. And also, as apples start ripening, they'll tend to drop from the tree or be easier to grab and twist and pull that apple off the tree. But just because a few apples have dropped doesn't mean they're necessarily ripe. I've had a few apples drop that aren't ripe yet. So check all those things. And, of course, taste. If it's a fairly sweet apple, and taste it. And if tastes sweet, good. You know, so we can look at all those different things. Now, in our own apple tree, I've noticed the birds have been working. And a common question I get is, okay, how do we keep the birds from eating these apples? Now, I've left the bird, those that birds are attacking, I've left those apples on just because I thought, okay, well, yeah, help yourself to that apple. Don't sample every one on the tree. So I thought, well, if I take this one off, they're going to probably move it to some others. But, you know, how do you keep birds out of a tree? There's not really a repellent or anything. That's why some people will keep their apple trees pruned low so they can physically put a net over the top of the tree. That's the surest way. You can try the things like a fake owl, a fake hawk, mylar balloons, pie pin.
Do they ever really work, though?
No.
Because the birds outsmart it.
No.
Yeah.
In a day or two, they've become accustomed to that, and they're probably sitting on the fake owl, you know, nibbling an apple. And so anyway, yeah, we work hard for everything we do. But anyway, those are the ways to kind of tell when your apple is getting ripe, because you want to harvest that apple at its peak quality. So if it's a late apple, for example, the Harrelson or mm-hmm. Harrel Red, those should be left on the tree until into October, because as the temperatures get cooler in the fall, that coolness builds up sugars okay. in the apple. So they'll develop a better flavor, an intensity, and more of a sweetness to them.
Now, when does Honeycrisp, when are they ripe and ready to go?
End of September or so.
So any honey
each season varies a little.
So any honey
generally, that's not an early apple.
Right.
But, you know, end of September.
So if you're seeing the Honeycrisp apples in the store, they're not.
Probably come out of storage.
Right.
You know, the apple growers have developed very nice ways, controlled atmosphere storage to
yes.
keep them all year long, which
oh,
is really,
really
nice
oh,
too,
yeah.
for those of us.
When we get apples over here, that doesn't mean they were just picked.
Exactly.
We, much like potatoes, we have extended right. storage in a lot of those
okay.
crops now. Okay, so several things that have come up. So sweet corn. Okay, this is from Kathy. She said, you mentioned that local sweet corn is way behind. Oh, they are selling at their stand in North Moorhead for the last 2 weeks at the Oasis gas station in Wall Street. $7 a dozen if you'd like to go. So,
great.
Kathy,
that's a nice price.
Thank you for letting us know that you indeed have sweet corn available. I'll probably have a pile of messages now saying, where was Kathy's sweet corn? Then additionally, Don, for you, when it comes to sweet corn, folks were curious, how do you tell if it's ready without just completely denuding
right,
it by pulling the husk off?
Because at either the grocery store, if they've got the locally owned, or
right.
the farmer's market stand, they really don't want you peeling back all the husks to look at it.
No.
And also, you know, one way in your own homegrown sweet corn is to use your thumbnail and punch the kernels, you know, so if they're clear white, you know, it's not ripe. But when they're milky and nice and full, if without tearing into the husk, I feel the corn, which is usually okay, and check the tip for good mm-hmm. tip fill. If it feels, you know, if it's a very narrow tip that doesn't seem like those kernels have filled out, it's not going to be as ripe or fully ripe. So check the top, the tip, and then I just kind of feel, and if it kind of feels like, boy, this is a nice fat
Nice
corn.
And full cob.
Yeah, nice full corn. You know, you don't want it over, but in most cases, they picked it not at the over stage.
Yes.
There's kind of a little bit of a, not a science, but a feel, isn't there?
It's like everybody has their tried and true method to tell when it's time to buy the melons in the
store
as well.
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, my wife came home because one of the grocery stores has muskmelon. Our muskmelon were too late. I'm not going to have muskmelon out of our own garden. In the garden, it's easy. When a muskmelon pulls a little tug, separates off the vine, it's called the full slip stage. They're nice and wonderful. And when you raise that to your nose, you can smell the aroma.
Right.
And in the grocery store, you can do that too. You can see if it smelled. And you can also look at the scar where it was attached to the stem on a store. And it should have separated off
sure.
Cleanly like
okay.
it would have in the garden. Now, when I looked at the store bought one that Mary bought, it was at what's called the half slip stage. They would have had to tug, and
oh,
it
sure.
only half came off. So we'll see
how that goes.
Is. And now watermelon. Boy, we could do a whole show on how to tell a ripe watermelon.
Well, we could.
I've heard by knocking on it. Like if you,
but
knock,
if it knocks
my
back,
dad,
that's bad.
If it knocks back, you're
my
trouble.
Dad was from New Jersey, wonderful watermelon area.
Yes,
yes, yeah, they did the thump test,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, and New Jersey, the Garden State, which we don't always think about, but we have a dedicated listener, Steve Bellow, out of New Jersey, so he's going to be happy to get a shout-out, except it's all about gardening in New Jersey for us today. Addison, do you have our video loaded up that we put in? Because Justin's not here, so I get to do just a smidge of bragging rights, because he and I are usually into garden wars, but I did a video of mine, and we can, if we can show that, you'll see it in the live stream, and Don, you'll be able to see it on our screen right over here. This is what planting June 1st brings forward. While the rest of us were trying to plant a field, I was also trying to plant a garden. So we're going to see if Addison can show that where we're at. I've just brought in like squash, summer squash and cukes and cabbage and some green beans today. He's going to see if he can bring it up okay. for us.
He'll get it, but okay. So is your garden way ahead of time?
No.
Since you,
no. Nope, Don there and I is. Were talking about okay. this. We're a little late. Yeah, so if you're looking on screen, you can see where the garden, you might want to play that a second time, Addison. And then there's that one lone sunflower. Thank you.
I love it.
How big is your garden? It's like, what is that, a half an acre?
I can tell you right now, it's pretty huge when you're overrun with tomatoes.
So,
man. It is 1:30, bottom of the hour. We are going to continue to talk about gardening. I have a question about Brussels sprouts coming up next. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Don. I do my own stunts. Kinsler of NDSU Extension.
Ladder and chainsaw.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining us. And speaking of which, you can join us next week, Wednesday. Free lunch for teachers. We would love to have you here at our studios on Wednesday, August 14th. That will be from 11 to 2 p.m. for lunch. We will have food from food trucks, a free lunch for the teachers, bouncy houses for kids, games, prizes, and so much more. Thanks for what you do, and please come and join us for lunch before
school
starts. Next Wednesday. Next Wednesday.
All right.
You just got a message that we are supposed to be there and wear the appropriate shirts. So read your email.
Well, I'll try.
Thanks, Mom.
I'll try.
Okay. Our guest today is Don Kinsler with NDSU Extension. It's quite the NDSU week. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Angie Johnson. She is Farm and Ranch Safety Specialist from NDSU. Don, we were talking off air about a number of things. One of them is that weed that we can't that we have too much of, that we can't get enough of getting rid of, and that's purslane. But before we get to that, Brussels sprouts. How do I know when my Brussels sprouts are ready? I always think they are, but I'm not really sure.
Do you like Brussels sprouts? Well, you must. You're growing
them. I do. I'm growing them. I do like Brussels sprouts. I like to roast them.
I have to learn to eat them.
Okay.
Because I like many things in the cabbage family with butter and salt.
Same. You can do that with these.
Yes, I bet steamed butter and salt.
Garlic is also helpful.
Go
there.
With that. It's been a long time since I've grown Brussels sprouts, but as the season goes, mm-hmm. they get more intensity. So yeah, good question is how do we know when they're ready? Well, when the little heads
right.
are kind of, you know, when you squish them a little bit and there's some substance to it, so they okay. aren't just all soft, but an actual little Brussels round little head of cabbage type thing, then they should be ready. But the flavor does improve if you leave it on and kind of start getting a little, you know, so you don't harvest it too early.
They are definitely a late season crop.
Yes.
There's no
they're a long season.
And I try to leave them out as late as I can.
But an interesting plant, you know, to see the big stalk with all the little heads forming along it.
So the first time I had a friend, she was part of a CSA group, and she got one in her box, and she sent me a picture and said, I don't know what this is. And it looks like the spinal column off the skeleton in high school's science class with all these little bumps on it, because all of the leaf spines are sticking out from the main stem. And I said, I don't know what that is, and I'm really not sure how you're going to eat it. But we've gotten way better now that she and I understand how to eat our Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, fascinating. And, of course, being in the cabbage family, I'm sure you've, you know, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli. Mm-hmm. Brussels sprouts. I'm sure you've had to treat for the cabbage worm also.
Absolutely. And what's your favorite methodology for that? I had a discussion with someone earlier in the week about just letting their backyard chickens go in and pack them away.
Good idea.
But
in the absence of backyard chickens, and of course, when you see the white butterflies, sometimes they'll be yellow, flitting around, and then of course they lay the eggs hatch into those green cabbage worms that just decimate the cabbage or in that family with holes all over. I like the insecticide 7 or 8 if you get them while the caterpillars are still fairly small.
They do.
Then BT, B as in boy, T as in Tom, Bacillus thuringiensis is an organic. It's a bacteria that just kills caterpillars, but they have to be small. So mm-hmm. if you hit it early enough, I like BT.
I like the BT as well. I think about that in field corn use, and essentially What does BT really do in field corn? Makes the corn not taste good to things like rootworms and corn borers. We still like it, but the bugs don't.
That's awesome. But, you know, there's nothing as unappetizing as a broccoli that you harvest and go to cook it or eat it and separate the parts.
Yep.
And there's a green cabbage worm.
No, that's not nice.
Exactly.
And we eat with our eyes. So everybody wants visually appealing food.
Yes, and that's about as unappealing as possible. We've frozen broccoli and then, you know, then
gone to... And still find it.
Yeah, and then you still find it.
Go ahead.
Want me to go ahead?
Okay, yep, go ahead.
So Don, we had a viewer ask, what are your thoughts on planting of quick harvest vegetables in the fall?
Oh, wonderful idea. In fact, if you plant radishes, okay, when we talk about quick harvest crops, crops that don't take very long to mature, mm-hmm. In that group would be radishes, lettuce, spinach, baby carrots maybe, and beets also. Baby beets. Okay, so if those are planted in late August here, they will mature during the cool season. You know, we'll be approaching September when typically the temperatures are cooler, and those are cool season crops. And some of the best radishes that you will ever eat are ones that you will plant in late August. Because if you plant them in May, you know, if you plant them early enough in May and they're growing and maturing in cool weather, they're fine. But if you plant them in May and then we get warm weather, oftentimes they'll grow up into tops. The radishes might be woody. They kind of have an overly hot flavor. Mm-hmm. And so the tenderest, nicest radishes you get will be those you'll plant later this month. Okay. Could maybe start soon,
right?
Especially if the weather stays like it is today.
Yeah, exactly.
You were talking about radishes when you said hot. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I swear on years that we are drier that I have more heat intensity in my jalapenos.
Definitely.
Because
I think it's that intensity, kind of the accumulation of the things that make them hot.
Yep.
It's kind of that, when things are kind of a little maybe under stress, the chemicals, the compounds just accumulate mm-hmm. in a more intensity.
I will tell you, nobody warned me prior to raising jalapenos a few years ago that was a hazmat suit project because I brought a bunch in and I wanted to make stuffed jalapeno poppers and freeze them for tailgating. And I took out my contacts. I had my glasses on. I was smart. I took my contacts out first.
Okay.
And then I had my glasses on and I had household gloves and my husband came in the house and I was trying to clean the seeds out of these things and I am coughing and sneezing and snots running and I'm like tears out of my eyes. He's like, what happened? I'm like, I'm just trying to clean the jalapenos.
I've washed my hands and then, thinking you're safe.
Gloves.
And then, you rub your eyes and it's ouch.
Yeah, that's a wake up call. I was blinded by the peppers. Oh, goodness. Okay, so those are just a couple of the things that we have been talking about today.
Talking about ripeness, another common things that will be coming up is squash. You know, the mm-hmm. buttercup-type squash, the winter-type squash. You know, not the zucchini and the yellow crookneck, the summer-type squash, but the winter-type squash. You know, pretty soon people's squash might be getting sizable. How do we know if we can start enjoying that? Well, first of all, squash, like the buttercup type, or similar, they can be left on right until the frost is on the pumpkins. You know, they can take some frost. That'll collapse the vines. You'll be able to find them easier than you cut them off. So that a little light frost, perfect. I leave ours out right until the bitter end. But if you want to start enjoying some, there's a way to tell if they are fully mature.
Sure.
Okay, a couple of ways. The first is if you look at what's called the ground spot, that'll be the spot that turns from kind of a whitish or lemon yellow to orange. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll be orange on the buttercup type. And then also the skin will lose its shiny glossiness and become more dull. So if you kind of observe them during the growing season, you'll see that change. The skin will become more dull. But also, here's a very good way. Just take your thumbnail and try to puncture the skin.
Sure.
If you can puncture, then it's not fully hard and ripe and it won't have the best flavor. But if it cannot be indented with your thumb, then it's good. It's getting ripe. But again, there's nothing wrong with leaving on till the frost kills the vines and then harvest.
What about storing those? Because I've been told you're supposed to take a week bleach solution and wash them, especially the vine end, so that they don't rot, and then keep them in a nice cool place, maybe in the garage, up off the floor, heat, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, a couple of things on that. They should be cut. The stem should be cut from the vine and left intact.
Okay.
So rather than, you know, so be careful when you do harvest, because sometimes when I've just grabbed the stem carelessly, the stem pops off, and that soft spot is a spot where rot could enter in. So keep the handle on the squash.
Yes.
And, the idea of a mild bleach solution gets rid of some of the organisms that could cause rot in storage. And then also, you bring up the good point about putting them in the garage. That buttercup type benefits from it's on the tip of my tongue. There's a term in which you put squash at a somewhat of a warm 70 degrees. You know, our garages. Uh-huh.
It's
embarrassing.
It's okay. It's not like winter wheat where we have to have a vernalization. I know that much.
No, shoot. But anyway, there's a term for letting the squash get more mellow.
Oh.
Because if you put it directly into, for example, a refrigerator, it won't develop this mellowness, and the flavor won't be quite so sweet and intense. So there's this period of at least probably 2 weeks.
Sure.
And so sometimes buttercup squash will actually improve in storage. You know, on my drive home, I'm going to remember that.
Of course you will. And just feel free to text me.
And so anyway, they will improve in flavor oftentimes in storage, so which is really nice on buttercup type because they can last for many months. The preferred storage is around 50 degrees, so cool, but not as cool as refrigerator.
Do garlic and onions, does their flavor intensify as they dry down? Because I tend to wait for the tops to dry down, pull them out, let them dry because I want the paper covering dry before I try to store them, but that also can improve flavor, perhaps.
Yeah, it does. You know, a lot of those vegetables like that. It seems when they get to their full dryness, their full maturity, then the flavor does. They get that nice onion or garlic flavor that just kind of mellows and gives them a little bit of time to kind of seep in, set in, I suppose.
Sure.
And so onions, you know, when you take a look at the garden, when they start to fall over. The tops start to fall over and start to dry down. I like to leave them in the garden and not harvest them until the tops are quite dry.
Oh, I could wait longer.
Okay. You really can, because there is some material that goes from the leaf down into the onion bulb.
Sure.
So I kind of prefer, I do like to time it in the fall, though, that I get them dug before rain sets in.
Yeah.
And, a person can leave them in. Oh, it's interesting. Also, potatoes. potatoes are a fascinating crop. I love growing potatoes just because they're fun. Now, I've gotten some emails from people wondering, what are these round cherry-like, they're green, but cherry-like clusters on the top of the potato plants? Those are actually the seed ball. You know, because we are all familiar with potato flowers.
Sure.
Yeah, some are white, some are purple, or some lavender.
Or cutting the potatoes with the eyes so that you have seed potato to plant with. So we're familiar with that.
Yeah.
But we don't see that seed ball very often.
Right.
What's going on this year do?
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, we're all familiar with potatoes blossoming.
Absolutely.
Okay? And potatoes are generally wind pollinated. Each blossom has both the female and male parts within that same little flower. And the wind vibrates the flowers, and so you get the pollen transferred. But successful pollination on potato plants out in the garden or the field isn't that common. But sometimes it does successfully happen. And so when the pollination is successful, it starts, the little ovaries down in that flower start to expand, and it creates a fruit. And the definition of a fruit is a ripened ovary, you know, from the flower. Okay, so these are the actual fruits. When you see these clusters of round, less than golf ball size, clusters of fruit on top of a potato, that is their true fruit. Now, a potato and tomato are in the same exact family. So if you cut those seed balls in half, you'll see a little developing seeds similar to a cut tomato. Now, they are not edible. They are toxic.
Oh.
So, you know, don't make jelly or preserves out of them. They are not to be eaten. And it's somewhat rare enough that I get emails about what are these. So successful okay, you know, in the garden, tomato pollination happens. You know, we get tomato fruit. In the potatoes, it seems to be more rare. I don't know why exactly.
Right.
But somehow the conditions this year must have been a little more successful. But you don't tend to see in your garden every plant with these clusters of round green balls. But it makes for some interesting conversation.
And Don, so I did a little Google research looking for the word that you were, that you couldn't, is it climacteric?
No.
No? Okay. Well, then that's something totally different then.
We're going to keep
we were trying. It was
cure,
like,
cure.
Cure. You cure. Wanted to cure.
You cure the squash. Yeah, such a simple word. Yes. Okay. You cure the squash.
Sure. You just give it that time to
mature. Give it the time to mellow and and attain its full flavor. Cure. You cure the squash.
That was simple.
In the
See?
Garage. Yes. Thank you. That would have bothered me the rest
See,
of the afternoon.
See, it began with a C, so
yes,
I mean,
thank you.
So actually, the timing is really quite perfect for all of these discussions. Tonight, I'm going to be at the Root Connections, which is an event with Grand Forks County Extension out at Gilby, North Dakota, and a farmer friend of ours from the show, Greg Amundson, who's also on the North Dakota Corn Growers Association. He's opened up his entire farm for people to come out and ask questions about how corn grows, what it's like to have the equipment. We're going to talk about erosion control.
You must work like 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. You're there this evening.
I'll be leaving from here very soon to go up
awesome.
There. And I think that the questions that you are answering for us today are, I'm hoping to use tonight in examples when we talk to folks about what they do in their yard versus what we do on a large scale agricultural operation.
And that's at Gilby?
That'll be at Gilby.
Yeah, that's a nice potato growing area.
That's exactly right. A great growing potatoes up there. I don't know if we have time to answer this today. Maybe I have to hold it for the next time you're here.
What's that?
I have a great big rose bush that probably needs more attention than I give it that produces rose hips. And I've always wanted to make rose hip jelly. So whether you have advice on how to get rid of the little tiny seeds inside or somebody out there whose grandma would make rose hip jelly, I'm going to need your help here. I got to figure out how to do this because
I've not made jelly.
I want to try it.
Out of those, our roses do have hips on forming.
Yep.
Yeah, well, that'll be interesting. Yeah. Invite me back.
I'm told the little seeds inside have to be removed and they're tiny. They're like aphid size. And I'm thinking, I'm going to hate myself for doing this.
You know, it's interesting. Roses, of course, are in the same family as apples and all those.
Yes.
And so, those rose hips are certainly edible. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting. Count the day lost, you don't learn something new. I have not cut open a rose hip. I'm going to do that now and see what's on the inside.
Go take a look.
I'll do it.
I've got a recipe. I just don't know if I want to put myself through the tedious work of getting it done.
Well, let's find a recipe.
Okay, we're going to work on that. Folks, it is 1:49 in the afternoon. We are going to touch on some more news and take a little break. But when we come back, we've got headlines from the agricultural world as well as the weather. Thank you, Don, for joining us today.
Thanks. Have a good rest of the day, everyone.
Be right back. I just thought I'd give you the wind sound effects. I'm here to help.
And it is windy out there, no doubt about it. We've got winds out of the west-northwest gusting close to 30, definitely between 20 and 30 most of the afternoon. Cloudy skies. It feels like fall out there. I mean, this is just early October weather we've got. Thank goodness it's only around for about a day and a half here as we'll start to see improving conditions. But we're at 60 degrees right now, but many areas stuck in the 50s. Let's see, coolest spot I can find here, 55 right now in Findlay. That is that's October weather. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's not right.
It might be October weather, and I know you're going to find this unusual. But you're definitely going to want to go check out the Big Deals Auction on our website because Minnesota Inboard Water Sports, they have an auction up today. It's an exclusive deal in Detroit Lakes for wakeboarding, surfing, skiing with your friends on a $200,000 boat for 5 hours on any lake within 15 minutes of Detroit Lakes. You can bid on this. The package is valued at $2,500. It will probably sell very competitively today. So it would be great if you guys go check that out at Big Deals.
Is a cooler of beer on the boat waiting for you, too? Probably not a good mix.
You should worry about that after.
Yeah, afterward.
Today, I wouldn't pick today to go.
No.
But I think in the future, we're going to have some good days again.
Plenty of good. Warm weather. That's a great deal. And lake of your choice, too, right?
Lake of your choice, 15 minutes within 15 minutes of Detroit Lakes.
Okay.
Well, there's like, you can't throw a rock in that
hit one. Exactly. That would be awesome.
So let's get people out there to go check that out again.
And they'll teach you how to, if you don't know how to ski, or
I hope so. I mean, cripes, I can't even swim. I can't imagine what it's going to be like to try to.
That's what life jackets are for.
That's right. I mean, when I was out today at the field with, we were doing a video for Ellingson Drainage, and I wore a life jacket just then, and I was just hanging around drain tile.
Just in case, right?
Just in case.
Just in case.
Right. New skills, man. Every day, folks.
No doubt, no doubt. So we've got some blue-green algae warnings going on.
We do.
What's that all about?
So you often hear this from vets here in town talking about, you know, if you have water sitting ponds and parks, anything like that, you can actually see some blue-green algae. It's called cyanobacteria can form. And the concern is to not let your pets be affected by it. Don't let your dogs drink out of that type of water situation, et cetera. But we know it certainly happens on large stock dams and ponds as well. And we don't want our livestock there. You want to make sure they have a fresh water source. Where does that blue-green algae come from? The fact that we see runoff in a variety of places. If we're out near a pasture, that runoff might be coming from a local field where we had heavy washing rains and it moved soil particles and fertilizer and moved nitrogen or phosphorus to the ponds. In town, it's coming off of lawns and golf courses. So anytime you're spraying, you're putting fertilizer on your lawn and you think, I could just put a little bit more out and it would look great. Don't do that, because the excessive amount of fertilizer will wash off. It will cause blue-green algae to form in still waters, and that can be a problem for pets.
Right.
So be aware of that.
Good point.
Here's one other thing. I think I've said this before. Put down the chickens. Just stop carrying them around. Don't bring them in the house, because chickens have now been found to carry lice, like you're from your dog.
How?
They're hanging. Okay, you got free-range chickens in the backyard.
Right.
They're hanging out with the dogs and the cats, and then they pick up lice, and then you carry it and or bring them in the house.
Wow.
Just stop carrying the chickens around, please. I know they're cute. You named them Fluffy and Macaroni.
I don't know anybody that brings their chickens in the house, but
me. I actually do.
Do you?
So we got to stop that, because chickens can carry lice. That's an unusual thing. One way that they are able to track what is happening, how infested the chickens are, et cetera, is they're putting little Fitbits basically on, because then the computer can take the analytics of the chicken's movements and how often it's trying to give itself a dust bath to get rid of the itching. So chickens are wearing Fitbits. They can get lice. Stop carrying them around. Man. These are my words of caution today.
And what, real quickly, what about hogs being raised now for human health?
We talked about this just briefly the other day, that there is a company that is doing it. They are using gene editing technology to change some of the dynamics in the hog so that they are more compatible with humans. One of the things they have to do is prevent the alpha-gal syndrome from starting, which is a sugar that, when you are bit by the longhorn tick, would cause a red meat allergy. But the thing that's happening with these hogs is they are looking to use their kidneys and hearts for organ transplant. So far, they haven't been completely successful,
right,
but there will be more gene editing done in order for that to happen. And the hogs are raised very, very well in order to be a donor.
That's good news.
Very.
That's good news. Well, that'll do it for Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The number one show in the afternoon, the Jay Thomas Show, that's coming up next.